Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, September 14th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the websites llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
Hey, Monica, we're doing pretty well. How are you?
Doing well.
Doing good. We finally got a little bit of cool weather coming in. We actually have the windows open for the first time, and we got a lot of rain last night, so my garden and all my fruit trees are very happy.
Oh, good.
So what's going on over there?
Well, we're kind of crazy over here, you know. I mean, here I am. I've been stuck in bed for a while, and I still can't stand or walk without help. But I got an invitation from a guy that's willing to pay for hospital beds and special airplanes and this and that. So I'm going to go to Pennsylvania, if nothing changes, the first weekend in November, and have a talk with several other people that this fellow wants to ask questions about. He has all these questions about how the world works, so he just decided that he had plenty of money, so he'd get a whole bunch of people together, put them in a nice, comfy hotel, and pepper them with questions until they fell over from effort.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, and of course, I love that, you know, that conversation about these subjects more than anything, obviously. So it's a good fit, and Jim can help me with all the difficulties, and it will be hard. There's no question about it, but once I get there and situated, it'll be good. So I'm looking forward to that. It just came up this week.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a time frame yet? Or
I think it's probably going to happen the first weekend in November.
Okay.
So,
all right, sounds like that'll be an adventure.
Yeah, it will be an adventure. It's the first time I've left Louisville since both operations, I think. No, yeah, since 2010. January of 2010 was the last time I left. I went to Hawaii to teach. Now I'm going to some small place in Pennsylvania right outside Philadelphia, I think, which is kind of nice. My mother's people came from Philadelphia. So it'll be fun. It'll be crazy.
Okay.
I
flew into Philadelphia a couple of years ago to do a convention, but didn't really get to see much of the city. Ended up going into New Jersey, but
yeah.
I just remember the airport.
I imagine it's one of those cities that you have to explore on foot, you know, because it's so old and so many layers of history are, you know, lying in the streets, you know, for you to sift out and find according to your interests. And, you know, a city that big is bound to have wonderful restaurants if you can sniff those out. So I always love to sniff around in a big city. It's just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much free stuff, you know, people talking about stuff you're interested in, or for demonstrations for free, or art openings for free. It's just so much fun when the cultural possibilities are, it's just a whole lot of people together, you know, that creates it. Anyway, I doubt if I'll do anything whatsoever except sit there and talk about cosmic this and extraterrestrial that, and stuff that is in my area of expertise. But I sure am looking forward to it, Monica.
All right. It sounds like fun. You'll have to tell us all about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and go to our opening riff. And for those of you who are calling in live, if you can just hang tight, we'll get to you in just a few minutes. If you have pressed the one key, then there's a little flag on my dashboard. So I will unmute you in a few minutes, and you can join the show and ask your questions. But for now, we're going to do our opening riff. This is from Kuo, September 25th, 2010. You, my friends, are deep sea divers. You are not satisfied to skitter across the ocean of life like a dragonfly. You dive deep, and you seek the highest and best truth you can find. And eventually, you pierce the veil of otherness and begin to feel the threads of commonality that lie behind the shapes of judgment. This unity is for all of you, and yet it does not keep you from being an individual. Every choice you have made in every incarnation goes into the personality you chose for this incarnation. My friends, it is as if you took a suitcase, not a large suitcase, but an overnight bag. It's a small stay, one incarnation, after all. You do not need much, a few gifts, a few relationships. You pack your bag. You pack your limitations, you pack your challenges, and you set out to plunge into a dark world. For the sun may shine upon the earth, but in terms of spiritual seeking, all is in darkness. Nothing can be seen. Nothing can be known or proven. And it is up to you to disengage yourself from your culture, your parenting, your hard-learned lessons of fitting in, to become, as this instrument was saying, a witness to yourself. It is not that you are a witness. You are you. It is that when you witness your own life, it gives you a sense of proportion. This instrument often, in challenging circumstances, creates a cartoon in her mind and then busies herself by putting the right caption under it to make herself laugh. The more ways that you have of lifting yourself away from the impulsivity of quick emotion and touching into that balm of Gilead, which is the underlying self that is one with the Creator, the more riches your incarnation shall have for you. Unity is the deepest and most profound truth that we know. You are all the Creator. Do not turn it around and try to say that the Creator is all of you, for the Creator is infinite. If the Creator was not infinite, the creation would not be one.
Thank you, Monica. I think this is one example of a place where the Kuo group manages to offer the same information that the Ra group offers, but in a much more understandable way. In that our incarnations are not all of us. We have, outside of this space-time illusion that we call life, a much larger personality, shall we say, a much larger array of learned lessons and learned gifts. And polished, balanced relationships with ourselves and with others. What shall we take this time? What do we want to learn? How do we want to serve? So that is what ourselves and our higher selves ponder. How shall we learn? How shall we serve? How shall we become more ourselves than we were before? How can we open ourselves more to our own essence so that we do become witnesses of ourselves? We need to have within ourselves a willingness to change the way we look at things if we want to enlarge our own understanding. Because the way that we look at things is inadvertently, for all of us, the sum total of what we've learned from our teachers, our parents, our friends, and the common buzz. Sometimes, quite often in fact, those learnings are necessary for us to get on in life, as they say, to make a living, to pay bills, to grease the wheels of polite society. But within ourselves, if we allow ourselves to feel that this is life, we lose that dimension of infinitude that lies beneath every footstep. So that when we walk into the now, into the present moment, we aren't simply walking into a linear place and time. The universe at every and any moment can lift away and expand itself within our attention if we focus well enough. So that suddenly we are not putting one foot in front of another. We are dancing within infinite locations that make up the energies of our mind and body. We're dancing with our relationships. We're dancing with our skill at understanding ourselves as well as others. We are dancing at being able to provide for ourselves and those we love, in joy and in thankfulness rather than in resentment. We're dancing with our mates in so many ways. And all of this can be subsumed into one moment of aha, one moment of awareness, when we just dive into life and that which was earth becomes first liquid and then the most glorious light, and we are off on the journey of a lifetime. I hope that each of you can take moments to witness yourself, to behold yourself. The famous cliche in Latin is ecce homo, behold the man. We are, in one sense, nothing special, in another sense, the absolute perfect fit that makes the rest of the puzzle of infinitude work. There is no other than we that can fulfill our place. So rejoice. You have work in being as well as doing. And even if you happen to be caught up in a challenge like I am, where you're trying just to get out of bed and not doing very well at it, and just really, you know, pretty much still as far as doing anything in this life, still the being that can occur when one is focused is absolutely essential to lightening the consciousness of planet Earth. It's what we came to do, and thank heavens we're here to do it.
Okay, did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
Don't think I do. I think that'll stand on its own.
Okay. Okay, well, our caller hung up, so I'm going to go ahead and go to the questions. Now, if anyone would like to call in live, you can call in at 484-321. No, wait a minute. That's not the number. Okay, scratch that. 646-595-2294. If you'd like to call back, 646-595-2294. And you can either listen in or hit the one key if you want to ask your question live. You can just call in without the one key if you don't want to be live on the show. Carla, we got a question sent in at the last minute that I didn't include in the email to you, but I'm going to go ahead and do that question first because it's a short question, but it seemed a little bit more urgent than the others.
Sure.
And the question is, how do you open – this is from someone who wishes to remain anonymous. How do you open yourself to trusting again after being betrayed?
I think that's really hard. It's doable, but it takes a lot of forgiveness. You don't see some of the forgiveness. You see that you have to forgive that person for being a lousy person. Okay, well, actually, that's easier to do than to forgive yourself for being in love with a person that you've come to find out wasn't all that you thought he or she was. And so all of a sudden you realize I have been betrayed. And I've had it happen to me more than once. It's so painful. It's just incredibly emotionally painful. I think there's nothing in this life that's worse than the sensations that go along with jealousy. And, it's hard. So, and the loss of somebody that you loved, and now you can't laugh and you know, spend time with that person the way you used to, it's a tremendous loss. So you're dealing with a feeling of betrayal. You're dealing with grief. You're dealing with anger. And I think the key phrase in here is deal with. You need to deal with it. Don't let it just sit there and rankle. Don't let yourself be hurt. You don't need to be hurt beyond the point at which you realize, yes, I have been betrayed. Okay, then you take that realization and you go through the process of forgiving the other person by putting yourself in that person's shoes and realizing, well, I see why he did that, or I see why she did that. But then, after you've done all that, you still need to forgive yourself, and that's really hard. So I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying that it probably will take you some time to restore your own faith in yourself so that you can trust your own judgment, so that you can become vulnerable to somebody else, and that next somebody else is going to need to prove him or herself, not just once, but again and again, probably, before you really let go and really can trust again. But I'd say the way to do it, basically, is just to get up on the horse and go. Jim, would you have a suggestion that would be more useful than that?
Well, it's you've suffered a loss, so there's a grieving process, and I think that we all have to go through that when we suffer losses that are large in our lives, a loss of a relationship and a love and respect for a person and maybe doubt for yourself. So once you go through the anger and the depression and acceptance and the quiet times and begin to heal again, then, you know, I think it's important to ask yourself the question is just how much do you wish this betrayal to damage your life? Do you want to close yourself off to future opportunities, even though every time that you open yourself, you know that there is a risk that it could happen again? And I think most of us would say, well, no, I don't want the rest of my life. I don't want my future to be destroyed, too. I mean, what was in the past is now gone. Mm-hmm. So you need to just determined that you, like you said, get back up on the horse and give it another try, give it another go, because you are a person of value, of worth. There are others out there that can see that value and worth, and there can be a hope and joy and renewal for the future. And we need to look to that and to not dwell overly long. But we do need to go through the grieving process. And then once that's over, then go ahead. Go literally ahead in your life and open yourself to opportunities.
Okay, that just triggered a couple of follow-up questions that I'm thinking people might be thinking about since they occurred to me. You mentioned the grieving process. What is a reasonable amount of time for that grieving process, or is it something that can be measured in time? Does the hurt ever go away? And, well, I'll go ahead and let you answer that, and then I have another one.
Well, I think that for me, the grieving process for somebody that I dearly, dearly loved is about 3 years after there's no hope, and you're just dealing with the grieving process. It takes about 3 years for me to remember without going back into the memories and feeling sad all over again. I've just noticed that happens to be the way it is for me. It sounds like a long time, too, but, you know, if you feel deeply, then it takes a while. Jim, have you noticed in your life that there's a periodicity to it?
Well, fortunately, the relationships that I've had where I've, you know, felt a loss weren't so deep that it took me that long to get over them. if I were in a relationship, if I lost you, for example, I don't know if I'd ever get over that. But I think it varies according to what you really have invested in the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, if it's been long, if you've done special things together, if you've been married, if you've had children. I mean, there's a lot of things that change how long it would take to get over. So I think it's variable, and I think your 3 years, you know, probably is a good measure for, you know, a strong relationship that has somehow disintegrated in the other person's mind, leading to betrayal, and then you're suffering the repercussions.
Well, Carla, did you continue? I mean, did you move on with your life during that three-year period, you mean it? Oh, okay. So you don't mean it took 3 years where you were doing nothing but grieving?
No, not
at all.
It's just that I knew that this was something that I wasn't going to be able to kick. It was a state of mind that was heavy, and it was on me, and I was going to have to allow it to be. And this was actually, the one I was thinking of was back in college. My first true love ditched me over the telephone 9 days before the wedding. How's that?
Oh,
oh, thanks a lot. Over the telephone, we're talking.
Wow.
Oh, dear, yes, I felt totally scrod. Anyway, I was. and I certainly did go right on after that, and I got like 11 proposals of marriage during the 2 weeks after.
Good heavens.
Yeah, everybody. I was at college, you know, the guys were sick on the ground, and they all thought that I was, you know, had treated him well, and they thought, well, I'd like to get a little of that wellness myself. But I settled on one guy, and within the 2 weeks, I was all settled down again with another guy. He had been taking classes, any class that I took, he took, just because he liked to listen to me and the teacher go at it. I was a philosophy and English major, and so was he, and he just liked the way I thought. I don't know. It was funny. Anyway, we had a long history of admiring me, but it was nothing had come of it, of course, because I was engaged. And so when that fell through, it was he knew exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted to, you know, get closer. So I told him at the very beginning of the relationship that I would never be able to marry him. But I thought that he was a wonderful person to be with because he was so supportive of me and always was. Just really enjoyed me, got a kick out of me, you know, and it's fun being with somebody that gets you. It really is. And I got him, too, and it was just really a lot of fun. And we went through the rest of college together, I guess, mostly. But then the music thing started up, and I started having music gigs. And then all the silly, crazy things that I almost, you know, was singing with Peter, Paul, and Mary, opening for them with Jim DeWitt. And then he's turns that down at the last minute and says he won't sign. So here I am married to him because he said we had to be married or we couldn't tour because it wasn't moral, you know. It was craziness. Anyway, throughout that whole thing, I felt sorry for Charlie, but he was a wonderful guy that I could just basically twist around my little finger. And, you know, that's not good for a mated relationship. You need to have somebody that's really able to hold his own and tell you if you're wrong and make no bones about it. And I was looking for that strength. And I found it in Jim years and years later. And meanwhile, of course, I had 16 years of a wonderful relationship with Don Elkins, which is indescribable and not like anything else anybody ever had, I'm sure. But I certainly have had my share of having to forgive and forget, and it's certainly possible. And no, I've never been paralyzed by grief. I know that it's something that you have to go through, and my own ethic is to go right through the center of it. Don't avoid it. Don't go around it. Don't soften the blow. Just, you know, say it like it is, play it like it is, and go through it. Go through the thick of it, and you know that way it's a clean effort, and you can be proud of that effort, I think.
Okay, a couple of follow up questions because this is an interesting topic. I think there's a whole lot we could do with this, but just first of all, what if that period of time that, because I'm thinking back to relationships I had and people I know, and so these are just some general questions. What if that period of time that you were with the person that you really thought was your true soulmate or whatever, and then the person has betrayed the other, do you think that was a waste of time, like time that, you know, was wasted? Or I mean, obviously there's always lessons that are to be learned, but when somebody opens themselves up and shares so much of themselves with another person, thinking that they're building a future, and then it's just gone. How do you get around that feeling of, gosh, I wasted the last, you know, 3 years, 2 years, 5 years, whatever?
Well, I don't think that it's wasted if you got out of that what you needed to get out of it in terms of catalyst, even if it was difficult catalyst. If it felt to you like there was a solid something that you were working on. For instance, in my what I call my starter marriage with DeWitt, of course, you know, our best moments were when we were on stage singing together. That was actually what had brought us together, was singing, and we had been local celebrities, I guess you'd say, singing in coffee shops. This was in the early 60s, mind you, when that was all very popular, the Kingston Trio, the time of the Kingston Trio, and Bob Dylan just starting out, Joan Baez. It was fun. And I was right in the middle of the folk songs. And during all of that time, I had related to DeWitt, I always called him by his last name, as a pair of hands, basically. He was an extraordinary musician, and he and I were very intuitive together. So when we created a melody, it would be difficult for people to hum it because we'd switch back and forth, and he'd sing it for a while, and then I'd sing it for a while. It was very organic and very much fun, and I grieved more over the lack of the singing than I did over anything else about the relationship, because it was just, I think we were very good. I think we had something to offer. I think it was definitely one of those, you know, forks in the road where I could have offered a lot of love to people and had a good life of serving others in that way rather than channeling. But you just never know what the next fork in the road is going to bring. And if DeWitt hadn't dropped out of the singing, and consequently, since I don't play an instrument, I was shot down as far as being a singer, because nobody wants to hear just singing. You know, they want to hear musicians playing along. You know, they don't just want to hear a cappella. Anyway, I just related to him according to the promises that I'd made. And, you know, I dropped back and punted with Marriage 101, you know, for better, for worse, or for richer, for poorer, and just saw to it that the bills got paid and that we were, you know, well taken care of. My husband wasn't one to get a job or finish school, so he was sort of my wife in a way. It was really odd. I mean, he just was around the house, but he liked to work weekends and nights, so I seldom saw him during the time that we were married. It was a very odd relationship, and he was working for minimum wage, so all that money did was basically run his car. He loved the car, so, you know, he broke it regularly. I think he went through 7 transmissions during the time that I was with him, which was more than 1 a year.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, well, the things that we do, you look back. But at any rate, you know, I guess I've always looked frail from the outer picture in, you know, it takes a whole lot to throw me off base, and I was just like, okay, this is a bed that I made. Now let's see about lying in it. And I really had a good life during the time I was married. You know, I wasn't abused. it was just there was nothing there. It was the lack of relationship. It was sad. It was very sad. I think he did well the second time around, and is still married to his second wife, and I think feels very good about it, the whole thing. So that was good. That worked out well for him. I'm glad.
You mentioned
what your
several
question
relationships.
Was at this point.
That's okay. You mentioned several relationships that you had, and I know the first one you said how you got each other, and it sounds like each of the relationships you've had have had a different flavor, a different dynamic. And do you think that each of us could be potentially matched with a number of different people, or do you think there's, you know, the romantic idea of your true soulmate, or do we have multiple soulmates? In other words, if you've had a strong connection with one person, how do you let that go and think, gosh, you know, how can I be open to another person when that connection seems so unique?
Well, if you grasp the fact that you've been with many, many different people during many, many different relationships, during many different incarnations here on Earth, you realize that far more than one person has a claim on your time, on your feelings, on your psyche. Say that you have decided that you feel that there's some sort of performing that you need to do as your outer service. Well, you build a redundant system. You don't just have one chance at being an artist. You put multiple chances to be an artist and multiple relationships that would support you in different ways if you wanted to develop different parts of your artistry. So I think you're exactly right. You know, we touch into people's energy, and there's so much there. I don't think much of the theory of the kismet, one, you know, only one life, only one love. I think that as a person who has been loved deeply and who has loved back, loved those people back just very deeply, I can honestly say that in my life there is no one Prince Charming. I have been lucky enough to have two wonderful guys that created a heaven on earth for me. One was Don Elkins, who created a, you know, he was a completely, I guess I'd say, abstemious, almost nun-like energy. And he was also, you know, not at all interested in his sexuality. He just would put that on a shelf somewhere and only pulled it out when, you know, we needed to bond over something once every, oh, I don't know, 6 years. And so, you know, it was that feeling of being known, of being completely understood. Don had a way of looking at you that you were quite certain that he was looking right through you. And he certainly was. He got people right off. And it scared a lot of people. He was intimidating to a lot of people. To me, it was a great relief to be understood like that. It was restful. But with Jim, it's a far more bouncy, fun, earthy, more like the mainstream of earth relationships. and it's a wonderful, highly romantic relationship has turned into being. It didn't start out that way. So we've been all over the map, Jim and I, on how we feel about each other, and we've ended up in a wonderful place. But I think if I were to lose Jim, and if I were to decide that I wanted to invest time in another relationship of that type, I imagine that I would be able to find someone to love who loved me. Yeah, I don't have any blocks against that. If I were, you know, left a single person, of course, when you're 70 years old, it's not exactly, you're not exactly, you know, sitting at the under the basketball hoop at the prom waiting for somebody to ask you to dance. You know, you're not. You've sort of passed up some of those younger images of being with people. And I don't know. Jim, help me out here. What do you think? Does it take, or do you think that there's one true love, or do you think that there are lots of different true loves depending on what you want to do?
I think both are probably true. It just depends upon a person's unique situation. For me, I think I probably, I think you're probably it, Ruck, you know, for the lifetime, this is it. But I could see, you know, before meeting you, thinking that, you know, this or that person was the one true love, and it turned out not to be so. you know, people are different. People are various, and I think just about anything is possible.
You're absolutely right. But I do think it does tend towards being a limited number of people that we can really connect well with. Otherwise, you're just driving yourself crazy.
Yeah.
I have never enjoyed dating more than one person at a time because it's too much work.
Speaking of work, how do you muster up the a couple of follow-up questions came in on this from this person. How do you muster up the courage to go through it all again when you've just spent yourself investing so much into that person? And secondly, how do you forgive yourself? And I know we've talked about forgiveness of self before. How do you forgive yourself if you feel you did something to drive that person away?
I think the essence of forgiving is not in understanding it, how it worked, or in explaining it. I think that forgiveness is more a matter of, it's more radical than that. It's taking that and saying, well, I certainly, you know, had a lot of errors in judgment. And I got a lot of learning all at once here, and it really hurts. So I'm going to work on that. But there's nothing in there that suggests that I'm a bad person. I'm the only one that is putting the fear into myself, so I need not to do that. So then, as always, when I'm concerned about something, I'll go to Holly. I went to Holly the other day. It was just before the homecoming, and I was in a bad way, and I was so unhappy because all of a sudden I wasn't going to be able to get outside, sit under the tent with everybody else, which I would have been able to do 2 days before, but bam, all of a sudden I couldn't do that. And I said, Holly, help me. And she said, live your life.
Tell them who Holly is.
Oh, Holly's the Holy Spirit. Holly's my higher self. And I think that my little flame of the Holy Spirit, I'm a Christian, so I think in terms of the imagery of that, the flames coming down from heaven and talking to everybody in his own tongue, the energy of Jesus the Christ that comes to me and talks to me in my own tongue is the Holy Spirit, that one little flame of it is mine. As I don't like to call her Holy, so I call her Holly. And Holly is wonderful, and I think if you aren't in contact with your higher self one way or another, that is really a good thing to do, because just some good down-to-earth advice like that. It's only three words, live your life. Well, that takes all the energy, that takes all the negativity away. All of a sudden, you know, you're not carrying this burden around. You're just living your life. I don't know, that helped me a whole lot. And I've had this tremendous sense of spaciousness that all of a sudden, you know, came around, and I realized, hey, this is okay. I'm going to be okay in here. I'm going to enjoy myself, and Melissa will help me with, you know, what I need to do in order to be part of it. And so that worked out just that way. You know, it was a great experience. So I think that you sort of have to take yourself in hand and pray. If you need, you know, if you're not able to forgive yourself right away, just pray, you know, Holly, help. Or Holy Spirit or higher self or however you pray, however you communicate with that part of yourself that is wiser. I completely recommend that, and it's a matter of desiring it and then working at it in order to open up that conversation.
So does the strength come from your higher self? The strength to continue and get back out there?
Perhaps my higher self is the one that's encouraging me to do that. But I think that there's a feeling of my own essence. Maybe this is just because I've lived a few decades now, and I have a sense of myself as having incarnational weight, I guess you'd say, that you can't knock me off my feet. I've been at this palm tree for 69 years. I don't think I'm going anywhere. You know, that's a Neil Young song, by the way. I don't mean to destroy my people think I'm not making sense anymore, but there's a line in Neil Young's song. He says, I've been working on this palm tree for 97 years. And I know exactly what he means. But I have a sense of my own beingness, I guess you'd say. Jim, how would you put that?
Yeah, I was thinking just a moment ago as you were talking that when you go through a loss like that and you feel betrayed or you just don't know if you can go on with another relationship, mm-hmm. I think one important thing is to reinvestigate your spiritual foundations. You know, what is it that you really believe? Who really are you? And let that be a source of inspiration for you to go forward, because if you can be secure in what you believe, then it continues to be a foundation and a motivation for you and a source of inspiration, and probably will also be a source of discovering future relationships and a way of living your life and continuing on with doing what you're here to do.
aha, what you're here to do. So that, does that mean we all have a mission of some sort?
Yes, it does.
Oh, yeah. I think we've all set this mission for ourselves before the incarnation. And it might not just be one thing, but I think we all have a certain direction in which we wish to go. And I think that most of us have made this choice that we were talking about last week of whether to be of service to self or others incarnations ago. And what we're here to do now is to refine that choice and to really help it to bloom, to be the gardener and to water our gardens and to begin harvesting the fruit. Because this is, you know, we're at the end of the cycle. It's time for a party. It's time for a harvest. It's time for getting it done.
Could we have been taken off course from our life mission? Or do you think there's multiple paths that we could take that are equally in alignment with our with the core mission?
I think it's extremely easy to be taken off path. It's something you have to watch very carefully. What you have to be aware of what your path is to an extent which will stand up to distractions, because there are things within us, not just psychic reading from outside, but really for the most part, there are parts of us that want to resist the spiritual impulse. That shadow side does exist in ourselves, and we may find resistance coming from something we think, well, that's outside of ourselves, that's an attack on us. And in actuality, it's a part of ourself that is lazy, it doesn't want to work that hard, or it is desirous of continuing with activity that is perfectly aware is not helpful to it. That's a big one. Just people being destructive and knowing it, but not wanting to change it. Jim, what do you think? I think that it comes from you. I think that the energy, it doesn't just come from the Holy Spirit. I think there's this interaction that allows you to pray and to hear the answer to a prayer, but I think that there's a grit in you, a binding energy. What people say when they say, you know, man up, you know, or gut it out, or something like that. I think there's that energy to persevere and stick with it until the job's done the way you think it should be done. That is probably, you know, one of your pearls beyond price. If you have that energy, you know, protect it, encourage it, support it.
Yeah, as for getting off course, it happens. But I think we also have a way of discovering that in ourselves. I mean, that still, small voice within really does have a way of getting through to us. If we'll just be quiet and listen, if you're confused and wondering, well, am I doing what I ought to be doing? Am I off the course? Yeah, what's happening? If I'm, doubtful about a direction, take time to meditate and to really ask yourself what you need to be doing, because you have a connection with your deeper self that goes beyond this incarnation and can direct you very wisely in this incarnation. And we need to listen to that voice. We need to, you know, a lot of people don't even seem to realize that it's there, but I think most people on the spiritual path do realize it's there, and they've been in contact with it. And we just need to reestablish that contact and just get that that energy flowing again and get the wisdom coming through and then act on it and go ahead and, you know, be the fool in the tarot card that's willing to walk off the cliff and then discover that there is firm ground under the feet, that you're not actually walking off a cliff, that there is something there, and your faith has made it real, and you will continue to walk, and you'll go on your path.
You mentioned your mission, and how do you know if you are in alignment with your mission? I mean, I guess through meditation, like you just said, but I guess, okay, like in the example of this person that asked the question that had invested X number of years with someone he believed or she believed was his or her true mate, and they were going to build this future together, et cetera, and then there was this betrayal. How do you know, was that what I was supposed to do, and did I screw it up? Or, since it happened that way, maybe there's something else out there and I'll make the best of it. I mean, in other words, if you did make a mistake and you lost something, does that mean you know, it's irretrievable, you can't get back on track and accomplish your mission?
Well,
or how do you get back on track?
It means that it changes. You know, the G, what is that, GPS? Is that right?
Global
right.
Positioning.
Yeah, that thing that keeps telling you which way to turn to get where you're going.
Right.
If you've ever noticed, if you've driven past where you're supposed to turn, it immediately figures out another way to get there. And, you know, as Ross said, there are no mistakes, but there are surprises. And I think that is pretty much the way I feel about it. You can't make a mistake. You really can't. Because we're all destined to mature, whether at a slow rate or a quick rate. You can do good stuff, and you can do stuff that didn't turn out to be so useful in terms of being able to teach you about who you are in this school of souls. But whenever you are experiencing catalyst, you can be sure that you're on the right track, because that's what we came here to do. Not that we came here to suffer, but that we came here to grow. We came here to witness, to experience, to make decisions. And one of those huge decisions that faces us in this incarnation and is the whole reason for this incarnation, for this density, is to choose the polarity, whether we are going to attempt to be of service to others in our inner and our outer paths, or whether we're going to attempt to be of service to ourselves. Once we've decided that, it's a matter of keeping the intention there, keeping it firm. No matter what happens, as long as your intention is to serve the Creator, that is beautiful. That's complete and that's whole. Because everybody has got the job of holding the light as best we can. So even if we're in a sick bed as I am, we are fully capable of doing our job. And that is to be ourselves and be transparent to the light. So the light can come through us and people can see the light. They don't see us. They see the light. That's the joy of all of us. That's the joy of resting in your open heart, is that then that energy is flowing and it feels good to be around you, you know, and people don't really know why, but it's just they're glad to be here. And people are always saying, you know, how wonderful it is to be at Camelot, our home in Louisville, Kentucky, and how it feels so different here and so loving. And, you know, it's just a matter of keeping a happy home, and people can feel that. So we all have that job. Now, as far as outer work, I think that we're redundant. We are made redundantly so that we can go from one thing that didn't work out and find ourselves in another way of serving that is equally of service. At least that's what's happened in my life.
So even though it may seem like a mistake from our limited perspective right now, and it may seem like we blew it and we lost this opportunity, in the end, ultimately, it too serves the purpose of our goal, and
right.
And
it opened us up to something new.
Mm-hmm.
Freed us up. No, it just turns out I'm not doing anything Saturday night. What did you have in mind?
Okay. Well, we are just about out of time. Did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
Just that, you know, we learn from everything that we do. Like Ross said, there are no mistakes. And if you look back at whatever experience you've had, even if you felt like you were betrayed, look at what really happened of a positive nature. I mean, there was a time in that relationship where you were doing things together and you were learning and you were growing and you were discovering you know, you did benefit from that. I mean, it may not be continuing, and you may have wanted it to continue, but there were some good things that happened there. Look at the bright side of what happened there, and build on that.
Yeah, sometimes that's what makes it hard to get over the grieving process, is seeing the good that was there that you did want to continue. But I guess you don't really have a choice on that. You're going to have to move on one way or the other.
Yeah, it's just useless if you're trying to hold on to something that didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, I think this was a lot of good insights there. So thank you, as always, for sharing, Carla and Jim. And as always, it's an honor to be here with you. Okay. Thank you so much. Now, to our listeners, you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit llresearch.org, which is our archive website featuring the Law of One material available for download, 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org. And you can submit your questions at bringforth.org. Just go to the Bring Forth 2 forum and post to the thread discussion Q&A with Carla L. Record submitting questions. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. That is September 21st, and we will see you then.
I woke up and the world outside was dark, all so quiet before the dawn. Opened up the door and walked outside, the ground was cold. I walked until I couldn't walk anymore, to a place I'd never been. There was something stirring. More than this, so much more than this. There is something else there. When all that you had has all gone, a more than this. When I saw the ship go down, I saw them struggle in the sea. Suddenly the picture disappears in front of me. Now we're busy making all our busy plans, our foundations built to last. But nothing takes as fast as the future. Much more than this. of fractured faith.